We're talking about the work of Radio Free Europe on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Established at the start of the Cold War, delivering uncensored independent news coverage in countries where a free press is repressed or not viable. A nonprofit funded by the U.S. Agency for Global Media, alongside networks like you might know of Voice of America. You can join in on press freedoms, on coverage of the Ukraine-Russia crisis, the war on information. It's 800-642-1234. Jamie Fly is president and CEO of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Jamie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first, our condolences on the death of one of your journalists, Vera Hirsch, last week, the missile hitting the building where she lived in Kyiv. What can you tell us about Vera, about this work?
So Vera was one of our journalists who was a producer of our daily coverage. And so she worked with our frontline journalists, directing them in their work on a daily basis inside Ukraine. We have a large Ukrainian language service that provides news and information in Ukrainian to the Ukrainian people during a time of crisis like this, but also then highlight stories, which we translate for other audiences, including English audiences on our website, rfurl.org. And Vera was essential to those efforts to produce stories, to direct our journalists. And unfortunately, we had this horrific situation where she just happened to be living by a site that the Russian forces targeted, and the cruise missiles hit her residential building, and she unfortunately perished at home in horrific circumstances. And we miss her dearly and are very saddened, our entire team, by this loss.
Jamie, has her death changed at all the way you go about reporting on this war in Ukraine and how you dispatch your journalists in covering the war?
The safety and security of our journalists is something we're always worried about wherever they operate. And obviously in the middle of a war zone, it becomes a constant concern. We have moved our teams, for the most part, out of Kyiv, the capital city of Ukraine, where our bureau in normal times operates from. Vera, like many of our colleagues, had actually moved to other parts of Ukraine to continue their work from safer locations. But the challenge we're having in this conflict is really nowhere in Ukraine is safe. We've seen, again, just last night, actually, Russian fired missiles strike across a number of cities and towns across Ukraine, not just in Kyiv. And everyone always has personal reasons and other things they need to worry about beyond their work. And in Vera's case, she had some personal needs which took her back on a temporary basis to Kyiv, where she unfortunately died. So it's something we're constantly assessing and trying to provide our teams with the support that they need at a moment like this. But we also have this commitment to our audiences to continue to report and including highlighting what's going on the ground, including sometimes at the front lines.
It's a difficult balance. And I'm thinking about in recent years, the Committee to Protect Journalists has really tried to further policies to protect freelancers and stringers and translators and fixers, people who absolutely do not have the full protection and benefits of a news organization that they're working to get a story for. And I'm wondering, what do you think about the vulnerability of that group of local journalists in conflict areas?
I think, yeah, they are the most vulnerable. And RFURL is a bit unique in the sense that although most of our journalists are actually staffers, they are local journalists. Mm-hmm. We employ Ukrainian nationals. So these are patriotic Ukrainians, in the case of our Ukrainian service, who care deeply about their country. And they want to report for their fellow countrymen and women about what is going on at a moment like this. And so we sometimes evacuate people out of the country so they can do certain production from other locations. But more often than not, as I've talked to our staff since the beginning of the war, a lot of them, even when offered the opportunity to leave, do not want to leave Ukraine right now. Again, sometimes for personal reasons, but also because many of them are so committed to the mission of providing the truth about this war that they feel that they can do their work most effectively from inside Ukraine.
We're talking with Jamie Fly, who's president and CEO of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, as we discuss press freedoms, as we discuss the protection of journalists, the information war that we'll get into here raging in the Russia-Ukraine crisis. You can join in your thoughts, your questions, 800-642-1234. Jamie, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty gets funding from Congress, through the U.S. Agency for Global Media. And I'm wondering if you can help parse us out because, you know, the mission is to promote these democratic values and advance human rights. Does that differ from other traditional news media?
So it differs in a sense that we operate in countries for local audiences where they often do not have the same diversity of media options that we have in the United States, or for instance, many Europeans have in Western Europe. So these are places where the governments are often cracking down on journalists and independent media outlets, where there is no viable business model often for truly independent, unbiased media outlets. And so we receive that congressional funding to make sure that we can at least be a foothold of balanced reporting in that troublesome media environment. And through that, we can help strengthen, ultimately, democracy, since free speech and independent media are essential to the functioning of democracy. And so that's why we are different. We're essentially an international public service media, and many international media outlets do not operate in the countries that we are operating in, or they'll at least operate in those countries, but only then report for external audiences in the global English audience, but really neglect the needs of the local audience. And so we also report in local languages, news and information that people need about what's going on in their societies that they can use to be empowered and be better citizens.
You were in Bulgaria recently to visit operations there, promote press freedom. And I think it's interesting that you had stopped operating there after 2004 when Bulgaria joined NATO, but recently, you know, reopened shop there operations in 2019 following what you said, a decline in media freedom in that country. And I'm just curious, would Bulgaria be a lens into what might be going on perhaps in the broader scope of the world of diminishing press freedoms, of digital surveillance and disinformation?
It is, unfortunately, because even before these horrific developments of the last several months with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, there's been a broader trend playing out where governments, and not always authoritarian or undemocratic governments, but also some democratic governments, have started to target independent media outlets, to put more controls on them, to threaten the safety and security of journalists. This has been happening for several years. We've seen it accelerating, I think, just in the last several years. And partly in response to that trend, our board of directors decided to reopen our language services, our local reporting, in three countries that we had abandoned years ago after the events of 1989 and 1991. We thought that these fledgling democracies now were on solid footing, where independent media would thrive. There was really no need for our local reporting in those languages. And so over the last 3 years, we've returned to Bulgaria, Romania, and then 2 years ago to Hungary. And unfortunately, it is a sign of some of these broader trends. And it's especially concerning because it's happening in three countries that are also members of the European Union and very close partners of the United States. And it just shows that this broader targeting of press is, again, not isolated to authoritarian regimes, but is even happening in some of our own democracies.
I wonder, does your presence help stabilize freedom of information, and how you track that or see whether that it makes an impact, that whether it makes a difference?
We believe it does, because everywhere we operate, we are not just focused on winning over an audience, of getting in front of more eyeballs. We also want to make sure that we are partnering with some of our local competition, that we do joint reporting. We have fellowship programs often that we offer for journalists from other news organizations to come work for us, sometimes at that local office we're setting up, or sometimes here at our headquarters in Prague in the Czech Republic. And so our goal is to never drive everyone else out of the local media market. And quite to the contrary, we want to be part of a flourishing media landscape where consumers have access to a wide variety of independent media options. But again, that's the rare situation. Unfortunately, the trend is towards more consolidation and fewer choices for individual citizens.
Jamie Fly with us leads Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, broadcasting, producing radio, internet, TV programs, 23 countries, 27 languages. We're going to talk further about Russia in a moment. Join in on Free Media, the language of war, credible information as Russia's invasion rages on. 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute with Jamie Fly here on the Ideas Network. We're honing in on the work of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, broadcasting in parts of the world where free media is in its infancy, being silenced, it's fragile. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. Looking at Reporters Without Borders, 7 journalists have been killed in Ukraine and 12 injured by gunfire since the start of the Russian offensive 10 weeks ago. They're documenting attacks directly targeting journalists wearing a press armband. Your questions about the challenges of press freedom, digital surveillance, countering propaganda, 800-642-1234. We have CEO of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Jamie Fly, stays with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Linda now in Sheboygan. Hi, Linda. What would you like to bring up?
Well, when I was in Vienna in the 70s, I listened to Radio Tirana, and that was just the opposite of Radio Free Europe. It was, I think, a Russian-backed station with a real clear signal from Albania, Radio Tirana, it was called.
Linda, thank you for that. Do you know anything about this and their signal strength, Jamie?
I don't know a whole lot about Radio Tirana specifically, but it's very similar to a lot of what we see today, where there are governments like the Russian Federation that have devoted extensive resources to funding outlets on television, on radio, that spout propaganda, that toe the so-called party line. We've even seen this just in the last 2 months related to the war. You can, every night on Russian state television, which is the only options that are really available to Russians still inside Russia, they get a version of the facts, which is often fantasy, describing the events in Ukraine is a special military operation, not describing it as a war, claiming civilians are not impacted, despite the fact that many, including our colleague that we discussed, Vera, are getting killed in their own homes. And so this is a long-term challenge in terms of supporting independent media and factual reporting. And the major difference between our work and those of the Russian propagandists or the other communist regime efforts over the decades is that we are by law independent of the U.S. government, despite the fact that we receive our funding from the U.S. Congress. No U.S. official can tell us what to report on or how to report on a topic. We guard that independence very jealously, and we make sure that we make the decisions here and our journalists make the decisions about how they should cover events and what topics their audience cares about, which is how a normal news organization should operate.
You had to suspend your operations in Russia at the beginning of March. What is your current status in Moscow?
Yeah, unfortunately, we had to suspend operations at our longstanding, our 31-year-old Moscow bureau. We had even been able to do reporting on the ground inside the Soviet Union before its dissolution in 1991. But now we've reached a point where journalism, factual journalism, is essentially being criminalized in Putin's Russia. And if you report the facts about Ukraine, if you report the facts about what the Putin regime is doing to its own citizens, you now potentially face treason charges. and the possibility of up to 15 years in prison. And so just given those consequences, it's very difficult to have a news organization based in Moscow at this point. We are still trying to do some limited reporting from inside Russia, but doing so in a way that protects those who work with us. However, we have had to move a lot of our journalists out of Russia over the last several years to other countries where they, again, still work for the Russian audience and still report on events in Russia, but they have to do so remotely and have to use other sources, including sometimes contributions from our audience to present a picture of what is going on inside the Russian Federation.
What about the current time, that 24/7 TV network? What is the status of that?
So we still are providing information across a variety of channels every day in Russian for Russian audiences, both those who are still inside Russia as well as those who have left Russia and live elsewhere around the world. Current time is both a satellite TV channel. Mm-hmm. It's available through traditional means outside of Russia. Inside Russia, because of the limitations imposed on us by the Kremlin, it's mostly available online. But even there, in recent weeks, since the beginning of the war, our websites have been blocked. Certain social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram are no longer available. And so if you are Russian and want to watch the Russian language programming that we produce on Current Time, you most likely have to use a virtual private network, a VPN, or some other circumvention means, or you have to find one of the social media platforms like YouTube that has not been blocked yet, and you can watch the content there.
Jamie Fly with us, president and CEO of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, as we talk about its work around the globe as a private independent news organization. You can join in 800-642-1234. You mentioned VPNs, and there's been reporting that you've tried to launch, websites in order to be able to reach people living in Russia. How do you counter the digital offensive that is coming from within Russian government?
This is a major challenge for us now in Russia, because the digital platforms, those were the primary ways we were able to engage with Russians in recent years due to Putin's early targeting of television and radio and his efforts to force us and other independent outlets off of those airwaves. And now even that digital avenue has become more difficult. And so we use a variety of tools beyond VPNs. We change websites regularly, so people have to find out what the daily URL is, essentially, so we can stay one step ahead of the censors. That's one way. We can use some of these other social media platforms like Telegram and YouTube, which have not been blocked yet. And so people can come to our content through those means. But we're also looking at more traditional means, including increasing our radio broadcasting into Russia, as well as things like encrypted apps that people can use to access our information without VPNs. And so the key in societies like this, which we've worked in other countries in the past, is a diversity of options so people can choose what they're most comfortable with. And the good news is we continue to see significant audiences go through those extra steps to seek out the truth, which has been our story for decades at Radio Free Europe, but we're seeing it play out on a daily basis right now inside Russia.
Let's bring in Joe in Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning. So my question is, it doesn't sound like Radio Free Europe is doing direct broadcasting into Russia from neighboring friendly countries such as Finland or Estonia. Am I correct, or do you have those kind of efforts going on over the airways where people could pick it up without special VPN, et cetera?
It's a good question. The radio broadcasts that I just mentioned that we do in a limited way right now, we do those from neighboring countries. The problem is with the strength of the signal. And a previous caller mentioned a Cold War experience of strong radio signals. Well, the strongest radio signals from a distance are shortwave. But the challenge now is that shortwave technology has fallen out of favor. And so very few people inside Russia have shortwave receivers. And so we do some medium wave broadcasts. So it would be the equivalent of AM in the United States. But again, even with the AM broadcast, you can only reach so far into Russia from its borders. For real penetration penetration of the country, you need to be on FM. And to do that, you need to be inside the country on local stations. And Vladimir Putin made sure a long time ago that that was not possible if you were truly independent.
Joe, thank you for the call. And Jamie, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Jamie Fly is president and CEO of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Ahead this hour, it's the view from Wisconsin public defenders on how to alleviate a backlog of pending criminal cases in the Wisconsin court system. You can join in on court-appointed attorneys and legal defense resources, 800-642-1234. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network.